WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk, coming to you live from Broadcast House. I cannot believe we have cruised into the month of May, and we have quite the show as Senator, former state senator and now mayor of Weymouth, Bob Hedlund would say, what an impressive lineup you have this evening. And we do. We start things off here. You heard a little bit of a laugh that was from our first guest, who is warming up in the bullpen as we speak. Plymouth County Commissioner Sandra Wright here for a county update. That's what we have. We usually try to use the first segment for updates. Usually it's the State House report, but beginning of the year, it was maybe even later last year, we kind of tweaked it a bit so we can have more county updates. What's going on with county government? So commissioners here to give us a little bit of an update. We look forward to that. We still are going to this evening have a State House report with State Senator Mike Brady, 2nd Plymouth and Norfolk District, soon to be District 34 once all is said and done in November and folks are sworn in January. We'll catch up with the Senator. A couple of things to chat with him about. Probably one would be sports betting. Change to his legislative district, and what is he anticipating the Senate doing when it comes their turn in a couple of weeks to tackling the House, but tackling the fiscal 23 budget. So that's coming up first hour. Second hour, we're going to speak with Dr. Dean Finelli. Now, good doctor is a patent, regulatory, and transactional attorney, but he's also someone who specializes in vaccines and COVID. We'll chat with him about a couple of different topics. Probably one is in regards to the CDC and FDA altering COVID guidelines, even suppressing findings in regards to COVID, as well as that, according to Dr. Fauci, that the United States is certainly out of the pandemic phase, even though most of the globe is still struggling with it. So we'll talk with the good doctor about that, get his take on it. And then we'll close things out with a good friend, Dave Russo, comedian, entertainer. We'll kind of get a little back behind the scenes with David as to how David got his start in comedy and entertainment. You know, these days in the culture that we live in, you have to be careful as because folks can indeed, if you say the wrong thing, if you're not careful, you're not mindful, folks get upset and could be something that causes controversy. I'll talk with David about that. You know, what is it like to be a performer, be a comedian these days? Is it tough? Also find out some of the latest projects, whether he's doing TV. You know, David not only is a comedian, but he does work for Dirty Water TV. You see occasionally he is the host of the show. We'll talk with him about that. And again, we're looking forward to talking with our guests about a number of things. And one little thing I do want to make sure I apprise everybody that we are working to upload the latest podcast. If you're somebody who follows the show, I do my best to make sure that we edit and put the podcast up. That's in the works. Hopefully by the end of the week, everything will be uploaded and up to speed. So we thank you for your patience, and we thank you for waiting. We're coming up to the time where we're going to find out what's happening out on the roadways one final time this evening. Sandra, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
I see you made it here. No problem with traffic?
No problem. Not tonight.
What part of the county did you come from today?
I came from Bridgewater. Yep. Seems to be a lot of construction going on, though, everywhere you go. But it was pretty easy tonight.
You think this is a good thing? Is this a good thing that we have a lot of construction?
A lot of it is needed, I think so. The roads are really in bad shape for a long time.
Well, when you have limited Chapter 90 monies.
Yes.
But hopefully we'll see more construction, hopefully more infrastructure when it comes to that. We'll talk more. We'll get into the nook and crannies of our discussions in just a few moments.
Right. Hey, it's Geoff. That's what my friends call me, Geoff, 6'190". I grew up on the South Shore, and now I live on the South Coast. Trust me, I'm not the person you think I am. I'm just like you. I have two little girls that are the same as yours. My wife and I go to work while they go to school, just like you. We watch reality TV and participate in social media, just like you. Mal keeps the books while I move things, pick things up, and put things down. Our friends are just like us. We all just want to live, work, and play freely. Thank you to the brave men and women who gave their lives. Thank you to the brave men and women who are currently giving their lives. Thank you to the brave civil servants that are serving our country every day. Thank you to the truck drivers and all of the workers that keep this country going. You are my heroes. You are amazing. You keep doing what you're doing, and we'll keep doing what we're doing. As long as we can, forever and ever, until death do us part. Like you, we stand with Ukraine. Like you, we stand for freedom. Our hearts and our prayers go out to all the people around the Ukraine. Godspeed. This message was brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We are back here on Monday Night Talk right now, speaking with Plymouth County Commissioner Sandra Wright. Coming up right after her will be State Senator Mike Brady, who is going to be hopefully joining us, whether in studio or maybe calling in. But we welcome the County Commissioner. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Seems like I was just in here not too long ago.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Time goes by fast.
What is the latest that is going on? I see one of the things they say that's making headlines is about a public hearing for a horse track.
It could be for a horse track. A lot of different things that are out there. Back in January, the commissioners put an RFP out, which was consistent with the Master General Law, Chapter 30, for the procurement regulations. There were seven organizations that had applied for it or requested an RFP, which only one group responded to it, which was the Boston South Real Estate and Development Group. Since then, and you know, the one thing that I want to make sure that everybody is clear on is that this is only a study. This is something that we really don't have anything to say about right now. They're going to come in. They have 3 years to do a study on what will best suit the wood lot, with the 100-acre lot that we have, which is known as the wood lot. It could be a horse track. It could be other entertainment venues. It could be a convention center. All of those things, I think, are on the table. I'd like to sit here and tell the public that I know or I feel one way or another. I do not. I don't. I'm not for or against it. I think that they have to do their due diligence and over the next 3 years and find out what's best for the community.
What is some of the feedback that you are hearing about just this being a study? Are people concerned? What are some of the questions that you've been hearing just as a county commissioner, as a citizen of the county?
Well, you know, I think that there's, I've been out to a lot of different places with a great number of people. Some, you know, you're always going to have those that don't want anything to come into Plymouth, and they're against a lot of different things. And then I hear the positive. I think that, you know, most of the people are saying that, you know, it would be a great thing to have something for the, town of Plymouth to bring more tourism in there. And like I said, I can't say whether I'm for or against it, and I'd be a fool to sit here and say one way or another, because I really don't know, you know, until the study is completed.
It's interesting that there are these ideas. I also heard a conference center also being touted or proposed as an idea as well.
I think that would be a great thing, and I think it's everything right now is on the table. So let's let them do this study. I know that we do have a hearing on, I think it's May 9th, and a lot of people or a group of people are going to come in, show their concerns. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do other than just listen to them, because we don't have anything in front of us saying that, you know, there's going to be one thing or another. We have to let them do the study, do what they need to do. I know that they have some meetings coming up to educate the public and what they're looking at. So I think that the general public who are either for or against should, you know, go to their meetings and certainly put in their concerns with them. It doesn't really involve the commissioners right now. We have nothing to do with it. We, you know, appointed the Boston South Real Estate and Development to go ahead and do the study, and for what's, you know, best interest of the public. So we'll wait and see.
I teased it at the top of the hour in regards to, you know, it being budget season. We know that last week the House approved their version of the state budget.
Mm-hmm.
County will be looking at their budget later this month. Any early indications as to how the budget for fiscal 23 is going to look for the county?
We're going to have that on May 26th, would be the final review of the budget. You know, I think we're in really good shape. But again, we have to be very cautious of what, you know, how we're spending our money and what we're doing. You know, we have to be fiscally responsible. Where I came from in the beginning, where, there was no money, and, we were $750 million in the hole, and we've come a long ways, and I do want to give a big shout out to our legislators who have definitely come forward, and they've, I think that we've now taken a turn where they find the value of Plymouth County and what county government can do, especially through the CARES Act. They were great support to us, and we're so thankful for them, and we have a great team in Plymouth County, and that's why we're here today.
Well, talk to me about that. I mean, you've had to, the county commissioners have had to endure and see a lot of tough times in order to be able to enjoy better times like the present, yes?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't think there's really a better time. We still have to be very cautious of, what we're doing and spending, how we're getting in our funding. But we just do the budget according to what our expenses are and what our not what our wants are, but what our needs are. And I think Tom O'Brien has always told me that it's not what you want, but it's your needs. What do you need? So we are very conscientious of that, and we try to be, like I said, fiscally responsible in everything that we do with. It's not, people think, which really kind of frustrated me, is when they heard all this money coming in, the $90 million for the CARES Act, and then the $101 for the ARPA funds, they think that we have a lot of money. We do not. We don't forget, we only did the CARES Act for 1%, and so we didn't make any money on that, and we shouldn't. That's for our towns. That's for our communities. So by doing it, for 1%, that left more money on the table for our communities, which that's what I think we wanted to do from the beginning.
So people don't understand that the county was basically a facilitator, mm-hmm. and you were just doing your fiduciary duty
that's right.
of taking it from the government for communities would say, this is what our expenses were during COVID, and then being compensated by that pot of money, the $90 million.
That's correct. Very correct, yes.
Okay. How are things going with, not to jump over the advisory board, we'll get back to that in a moment, but how are things in regards to the ARPA monies and awarding money to the communities within the county?
Well, I think, you know, of course, the advisory board always has a lot to say of, you know, where our budget is and where we're going with it. I think that they're very, very pleased with how we've handled the, you know, the CARES Act and the ARPA money. You know, we've had, you know, a great program to put forth to our communities. And, you know, thanks again to, you know, our treasurer, Tom O'Brien. He's done a great job in putting the program together. And, the advisory board really, it's changed over the years, seeing how county government has been able to go ahead and make this turn and really do what's needed for our communities, which we knew in the very beginning when we took the CARES Act money, that this was something that we weren't going to turn back over to the state, that we were going to keep it and we were going to do it, you know, for our communities.
And just as a reminder, that they were communities that were like, no, we don't. And I'm talking about the CARES Act. Mm. Who poo-pooed the idea of taking any funding from the county. But there were some changes of heart when it came to that money. And and it was a handful of communities, bigger communities, that were like, no, we'll only take what you know, the state gives us. But when the rubber hit the road,
we had a lot of controversy. And, you know, I can't blame anyone who was at that point was against us and not taking the money and thought that we shouldn't take the money. Don't forget, we've never come across this pandemic before. We've never done this before. We've never been granted, you know, $90 million ever. And, you know, it was something that we had to do, and we had to do it the right way and the correct way the first time around. And I think that, you know, I know we did a great job. And, you know, it's like I said, I'm not taking any credit for it. It's, you know, everybody, the whole team, our legislators who, like I said, you know, finally came and realized the value of county government and what we can do.
What is it like on a regular basis having conversations with the advisory board? And for folks who don't know what the advisory board is, explain what exactly is their role when it comes to county government.
Yeah, so they oversee our budget. And, you know, in the past, you know, it was really touch and go with, you know, where our deficits were and what we were up against, you know, different times. But I think over the past, like, again, you know, because of the CARES Act, we've done a great job. The communities are all happy with us. You know, at one point, they didn't think that we should, you know, really be doing much of anything. Again, you know, you go back to 2010 when I came in, they wanted to abolish us. And I believe that they've come around and they've seen the value of it and what we can do. And I think that they are a big support to us. I think we have all the communities on our side right now. Before we used to find that there were probably half the group that was against us. And, you know, so we're always battling that. But I think everybody's in line with us right now as far as the advisor. It's great talking to them. You know, I remember years ago when we just weren't, you know, in talking to anybody because they just didn't have the faith in us. But it's a nice turn, and we're all really happy about it. And, you know, we appreciate all the advice and what they, you know, help us and do. And again, we just have to keep plugging along. It's all about the county. It's all about finding out what we can do for our communities. I've been out talking to a lot of different town managers, and, you know, and I keep asking them, you know, after the money, then what? Where do you go? What do you do? You know, can the towns afford what they have? And, you know, I've been talking about some programs maybe to help the towns, and I think that this is something that we have in discussion of maybe we can approach them with some programs. I don't know what, you know, every town is different and they all have, you know, different needs. But there are some towns that, you know, probably can look now towards regionalizing a little bit. And I look forward to that because, you know, we're here to help them.
What are some of the things that, and this is not a new conversation, this is something that has been bandied about in the past, how far it has gone, only the county commissioner, only the county knows.
Yeah.
But what is there anything, any new revelations or anything, whether it's whether it's fuel costs, whether it's aggregate, what is it that we could be shared services that everybody can have a hand in and be able to utilize?
Every town is different. Every mm-hmm. town has their own, something that they would like us to regionalize with. I hate to say too much about it because I think I then get the feedback, well, you're trying to take jobs away. The one thing I personally express is IT. Every town has their IT person, which they need, they should. But what happens when they're out on a medical leave, or what happens when they're out on vacation and the system goes down? I think that if we had a county IT, we could certainly step in and help them during the time of need. Not to take over, not to, eliminate any jobs, but I think that we, in partnership, could enhance and help them.
Almost like a safety net.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, what do you do when, you do have somebody out on a medical leave and you don't have anybody covering that position? And, what are you going to do? You're going to call somebody in and you're going to pay astronomical, amounts of money. So it's something that, there's a lot of different programs that we should be looking at for our communities.
Just tuning in, we're speaking with Sandra Wright. Sandra is a Plymouth County Commissioner. This is, what term are you serving in right now? Is it your third, fourth?
I'm in my fourth.
Your fourth, okay. Well, you're up for re-election later on this year. How's your bid for re-election going so far?
Oh, it's fantastic. I dreaded going out and getting the signatures that I had to get, but I had such a great group of people who, helped me. We've got over 2,000 signatures. I should have turned my papers into the state 2 weeks ago, but I've just been so busy doing other things that I haven't gotten there, but I'm hoping to get there this week. I'm just so thankful that I do have the support. I really feel good about it. I'm, all for the communities and how we can help and what we can do. And I was there during the tough times. I came in when it was broken. I'm the one that stuck it out and, with others helping me, we really rebuilt it. And I think we've done some really great things. I'm proud of the work that I've done with the support of, the other commissioners and the treasurer. But I feel very confident, and I look forward to serving my communities for the next 4 years.
If you are reelected, well, first, you, as long as you don't have a Republican opponent,
right?
Then that spells being on the ballot in November.
Yeah.
What would you like to do if you are elected to another term? Do you look ahead as to if you're talking to folks out on the campaign trail and say, these are some of the things that I would look to accomplish if I am reelected to a fifth term?
Well, for the last probably 8 years, I've always been very passionate about the fire and police. Being a firefighter for 15 years myself, I know their needs. I know what their criteria is for training, and things have changed. It's not like the same when I was back a firefighter. Things have changed so much. They deal with so many other things, new things that, we never believed would ever be there, that we would have to face. So, of course, I've always worked with the firefighters. They need a training facility or training for their men instead of sending. Right now they're sending them up to Stowe.
Stowe, yep.
Yeah, which is, it's costly. And the other thing is, I've gone out and talked to all the police chiefs, and I'm right now in the beginning of putting an RFP out for a gun range. There is no place for them to practice, and they need that training. Not only do I want just a gun range, but I want all kinds of, things that are going to come into play later on, like tactical and other things. So I look forward to any input that any police, fire, whatever their needs are, let's talk.
Anything we haven't touched upon during our conversation here that you'd like to touch upon?
I think we're good. I'm just looking forward. I'm just finishing up and getting my papers in to be on the ballot in November. I just want to thank all our legislators for, again, I'm so thankful for them. And we have a great team in Plymouth County, and I'm hoping to serve along with them for the next 4 years.
Looking forward to Mother's Day, too?
It's kind of crazy. Actually, I don't know what I'm going to do. I always try to get up north, but I don't know if I'm going to get up there or not, so...
Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And providing
for
a full plate of topics and discussions in regards to Plymouth County.
It's always a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you.
Sandra Wright, Plymouth County Commissioner, our guest. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, State Senator Mike Brady should be joining us via the phone in just a few moments. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The pandemic is over and life is finally returning to normal. It's time to return to McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman. Come enjoy Shepherd's Pie, a pint of Guinness, and one of the best pizzas you'll ever have on the South Shore. Play Singo Wednesday nights at McGuigan's or listen to the live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night. For comfort food with an Irish pub atmosphere, go to McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street in Whitman Center. And check out the patio at McGuigan's next door at 552 Washington Street.
Today we met another happy customer at Ocean Street Auto Repair and Service. Hi, what's your name?
Donna.
Hey, Donna, what do you like about Ocean Street Auto Repair and Service?
They're very nice here. They help you out as much as they can. They're always trying to fit you in when you need work done. And I always get my gas here, and they're just very friendly and convenient.
And here's Ed Rooney, co-owner of Ocean Street Auto Repair and Service in Marshfield. So, Ed, if I want to bring my car in for service, do I need to make an appointment or just show up?
Appointments are pretty good. Walk-ins we do take. We could squeeze them in. If not, usually we get them in within an hour or so. Saturdays, we do walk-ins all the time.
They've got over 40 years of experience in the auto repair business. They'll work with your insurance company and will complete all of the paperwork. Call today for a free estimate, 781-837-0924. Ocean Street Auto Repair and Service, 2054 Ocean Street in Marshfield.
Hi, my name is Alex Byzantin, and I'm running for Plymouth County Commissioner. I am the former chairman of the Abington Conservation Commission, former Abington Water Commissioner, and now serving in my second term as Abington Selectman. I am currently serving on the executive board of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. If you would like to learn more about my candidacy, please visit my website at alexbyzantin.org or follow me on Facebook. I am Alex Byzantin for Plymouth County Commissioner, and I approve this message.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we're back. And joining us via the phone line is State Senator Mike Brady, serving the 2nd Plymouth and Norfolk District. Senator, good evening. How are you, sir?
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
We're doing good. I thought it was your turn in the as far as state senators and state representatives to come on. So I hope all is well. What's interesting and what's good timing is that up next in the budget process is the state senate. So I thought we could talk a little bit about that and maybe even see if we can tease any sports betting legislation to find out where that stands these days.
Yeah, that'd be great. The Senate finally passed the sports betting legislation, and from my constituency, I've had overwhelming support of it, and I've been advocating on it for many, many years since it was, since the gaming legislation was passed, and a lot of my constituency has advocating, so we finally passed it. There is a little difference between the House and the Senate version. And one big issue, as you're aware, is whether you can bet on college games. And there's a lot of debate on it. So the Senate did not accept any college sports betting. The House of Representatives did. So it's going to go to a conference committee to hash out the differences. And there's debates whether we don't allow college sports betting with teams in Massachusetts, I should say, compared to allowing sports betting for colleges outside of Massachusetts. And that was a big issue. And we did get a lot of correspondence from colleges in Boston, from the Boston colleges, the universities, et cetera. They were concerned about any sports betting in regards to colleges that are housed in Massachusetts.
How will, if this bill is able to get past the committee and get on to the governor's desk, what does the state stand to gain from sports betting?
Well, I think a big issue, people are doing it now, as you know. I mean, you can drive.
Yeah, they go elsewhere.
Yeah, you go to Rhode Island, you can go to New Hampshire. A lot of the states around us have legalized it. And if you ever drive to these states, and I have to confess, I'm not good with technology, with sports betting, but all the people younger than me, that's all they do. That, you know, even a couple of years ago when Tom Brady, even though he got traded to Tampa Bay or he left the Patriots, you know, people would have bet on when they went to the Super Bowl. The TPC golf tournaments, all these other things. And we are losing millions and millions of dollars of revenue outside of the Commonwealth. So that is a big boost for revenue, plus jobs. I mean, when the elimination of dog racing happened, we lost jobs down at Rainham and up in the North Shore. And, you know, the sad part is they took care of the animals better in Massachusetts than they did to other states. So, and I know they kept the simulcasting going for the time being, but as I said, all of these cars that are betting in other states are from Massachusetts, a majority. Plus, people can sit in their house and bet from their home through technology. So we're losing the revenue from that. And, you know, we want to support maybe the veterans agencies, the veteran VFWs, to be able to utilize their facilities for betting. I know a lot of amendments were filed, not everything passed, but I think that at the end of the day, it's been long overdue. My constituency overwhelmingly has called me in favor of sports betting. And there was a lot of different versions filed. We combined a lot of the legislation in the Senate to get it passed. And now, as I mentioned, it's going to a conference committee. So the differences will be decided between the House and Senate conference committee. And then it comes back to us for a final vote.
If we could kind of go from talking about sports betting to talking about a bill, I believe that you were part of S-926. This is assault and battery on medical technicians, ambulance technicians, operators, and health providers. Where does this bill stand?
Well, you know, I filed this and supported it with a lot of other legislators. We have to protect our first responders. And we passed legislation to protect some of our nurses, you know, whether it's in the intensive care unit or the emergency rooms, but that got lifted during the COVID. Obviously, we were facing a very difficult time the past 2 years. But our first responders, as you mentioned, they're out in the field, ambulance workers, et cetera, and they have to be protected. So I'm hoping that gets passed this year. You know, as you know, most bills go through committees, and they, if they do get out of a committee, they usually go to Ways and Means or a final committee, and then they get voted on. But I'm in constant contact with leadership to hopefully they get that moving forward. And there's other bills to protect our firefighters as well and our police officers. So there's so many different bills to protect our first responders. And sometimes, as I mentioned earlier with the sports betting bill, sometimes they do a combination of different bills filed to come up with a final version. I'm hoping that passes before the end of the season, the end of the fiscal year, because, again, these first responders, as you and I know, have been working through the pandemic, have been out there day in and day out, and they take care of our most needy people, you know. My father had two strokes years ago. He passed away in 2001. I can remember the firefighters coming to the house because I was the only one living at home at the time. My brother and sister were often, they were older than myself. They were married. And, you know, I was working during the day. We had home health aides and visiting nurses. But it's very difficult. And I talk to a lot of these first responders every day and, you know, listen to them on what they got to go through every day. And they've been out there. So I'm hoping to get this passed before the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, we're speaking with State Senator Mike Brady, representing the 2nd Plymouth Norfolk District. Oddly enough, your district is going to change come January 2023, and they're going to actually rename it, aren't they? Isn't it now going to be known as District 34? Is that accurate?
Well, that initially, when they're changing district names, they come up with these like numbered districts, but the district is actually going to be called the 2nd Plymouth Norfolk District, and I'll explain. Currently, I represent what's called the 2nd Plymouth Bristol District, and that's having part of the town of Northeastern, mm-hmm. going through Brockton, Whitman, Hanson, Hanover, Halifax, East Bridgewater, and Plimpton. with the redistricting, which they do every 10 years based on the population and the demographics, the new district is going to be called the Second Plymouth Norfolk District, because it's going to include the two towns in Norfolk, the town of Avon, where my brother had been a selectman for many years. He passed away, unfortunately,
due to COVID and
circulation issues. But the town of Avon will be included. And then precincts 1, 2, 3, 7, and 8 in the southern part of Randolph. So it's not going to be all of Randolph. And I was still in that new district. It will still include the city of Brockton, the town of Whitman, the town of Hanson, all of East Bridgewater, and the town of Halifax.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Hanover?
Hanover is in the new district, so I won't be representing Hanover after next year. And I want to thank all my friends and supporters in the town of Hanover, as well as the town of Plimpton. That'll be in the district, including part of Cape Cod now. And then the part of Northeastern, which I had, that'll be in Senator Timmelsey's district if he gets reelected. So again, I'm going to still represent Brockton, Whitman, Hanson, Halifax, and East Bridgewater. And Hanson, again, I got to get reelected, of course. And then the new towns will be Avon and the southern end of Randolph.
Let's talk funding. Let's talk finances. A couple of different things. The Senate recently passing a bill that will authorize $300 million in funding for transportation. Is this infrastructure? Is this like the MBTA? Where does the money go? Where's the money going for funding for transportation?
That's a great question. Yeah, as you know, our roads are in deplorable condition, and we get complaints, and there's different sources of funding that we get to fix our roads and our transportation infrastructure. Some is federal funding, like CDBG, which is Community Development Block Grants.
Yep.
Then there's direct federal funding that comes to different major thoroughfares and routes in the Commonwealth. Then there's Chapter 90 money. And then there's also like $100 million in that for statewide projects to address congestion. And we're pushing to support electric vehicle infrastructure and improve public transportation. So it's a combination of things. But the majority is with the Chapter 90 money. That is to fix our roads. And I everywhere I go, and I'm sure you're aware, you know, the roads are in deplorable condition, and we suffer with the tough winters we have had, even though we may not have as much snow this past winter. But, you know, you got cold spells and warm spells and everything from pipes that need to get fixed. Sometimes we do work with the gas companies and infrastructure with the water and sewer, but our roads are in deplorable condition. I don't care if I'm in the city of Brockton or if in the town of Hanson or Hanover or Plimpton or Halifax, East Bridgewater. So we need major funding for that infrastructure. And that money is going to 90% of it is going to the infrastructure for the roads, but also to help with congestion, support electric vehicles, and improve some public transportation as well. And there's other funding for the public transportation. I know, like the Brockton area transit, we end up getting some funding for that. They're going to look to modernize their fleet. I know some of the towns who have the GATRA, different companies use different sources of funding to transportate our elderly, et cetera. And that's so much a needed endeavor. I tell you, I get a lot of concerns from residents on that issue.
And this is money that it isn't the usual local aid Chapter 90 money. This is additional funding, like you said, via federal, state. That's what this bill is, correct?
Well, this is all state funding. As I was explaining, we get different sources coming from the feds and even some local communities. But this is above and beyond the normal state funding that we have. It's an additional $300 million funding for transportation infrastructure. So the good news, even though we've gone through a serious, serious pandemic with the COVID, the revenue in the Commonwealth is moving in the right direction. Plus, we were able to get influx of money from the federal government, APA money, et cetera. So that has all helped us out tremendously. But again, this is one-time funding mechanism. We still got to look for other funding, and that's why the sports betting is important to get more funding, looking for revenue down the road.
When do you anticipate a discussion, debate, amendments filed for the Senate's version of the FY23 budget?
Well, we're going to be discussing it, and I'm part of the Ways and Means Committee, and we're going to be discussing it in about a week. The budget, the House did their version. The governor presents his budget first. The House does their version, and then it comes to the Senate.
Right.
And so we're going to be taking that in the Ways and Means Committee in about just another week or so. Then beyond that is when it gets filed out of Ways and Means, and it goes before the whole Senate there, and then we can file amendments. We usually got about a week to file amendments. I usually get money in the budget for the Silver Lake Regional Water District, because, you know, in Halifax, the Montfaucet ponds, the ponds that feed Silver Lake, Furnace Brook, and Stump Brook. You know, Silver Lake was once one of the most pristine water resources in the Commonwealth. And when the water levels went low, and that's why even Brockton had to go with desal. And, you know, we're looking for other sources. So when they started feeding in from these other sources, meaning Stump Brook and Furnace Brook, the water wasn't as good. And there's, you know, different things that get into the water. And you want to make sure clean water is able to be, you know, portable and clean and safe to drink. So I always get money in the budget to clean the cryonic bacteria and other things that may enter the water system, but also infrastructure. Our pipes are old, and we need to replace them. We have done some on Route 27 coming from Silver Lake into the other towns that I represent, including the city of Brockton, but we need to keep funding that. And then, you know, I got money. I'm on the Veterans Committee. I got money in last year's budget for a World War One memorial that's going to be relocated from where it is in Whitman next to the fire station.
Yep.
We're hoping to do more for veterans in the budget this year. And public safety is a big thing. We did, despite what happened with the police reform bill, we did increase funding for police and support their budgets. And we're looking to increase funding for that. And there's also a lot of other things with early retirement that gets proposed. But the last early retirement bill that went through, everybody wants to jump on the thing with early retirement, but it wasn't fine. It wasn't filed properly, because if somebody worked one day and then somebody worked 20 years, they were included in the same ball of wax. And the other thing, it was difficult with the past few years to decide who was working from home, who was working going into the office every day. You know, our supermarket, our store workers, they were going into work every day. They're not getting a benefit for this. So we're trying to make it even and fair for everybody. I know there's another bill filed for teachers that I supported, and we were able to get that out of my public service committee. That is in Ways and Means. And that's strictly for educators. So that's a different bill. This other bill that was filed was too wide open. So it was very difficult to get that finalized. And, you know, you can always make amendments and adjustments, but if they're not going to pass, it's tough to get it over the finish line. So, you know, the budget's going to be a big thing. The good news, revenue is up, but this is for this year. We still got to prepare for the future down the road.
And I also want to make sure I give you an opportunity to talk anything that might be related to ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, because it's federal funding that was through this the Biden administration. Is that anything that will be discussed during the FY23 budget, or is that something that is strictly already been dealt with and it is done with?
Well, that already passed through the state legislature, but they're still working on, there's additional money that could be spent in different avenues. And I'll tell you, I want to thank not only a federal delegation, but our Plymouth County delegation. You know, when that first chunk of COVID money was coming out, you know, no disrespect to the governor, he's done a decent job, but he would have controlled where the money was going, and it wasn't guaranteed to go into Plymouth County. Our Plymouth County delegation, from Treasurer O'Brien to county commissioners, they applied for some of that funding. They were able to get it, and it was implemented at a more expedient and faster level to get to these cities and towns. So Brockton, as you know, got hit with the second highest hit on the COVID pandemic in the Commonwealth, next to Boston. No other community was close, but these towns got hit too. So towns like Hanson and Hanover, they all applied for some of that funding. So this ARPA money now is another phase. It's part of the American Rescue Plan, and it allocates a total of $3.66 billion in spending. And it utilizes up to $2.5 billion and available rescue plan money funds. And this funds are already going to be available to the Commonwealth and through the state. So that's another source of funding that will help many cities and towns across the Commonwealth. But, you know, we're still working on trying to get more money into the Commonwealth for these cities and towns. You know, like Whitman and Hanson, which I represent, their school district suffers because they're a combined school district. It's like a regional school district. And constantly they're battling to get more funding for their schools, and depending on their demographics, their average income per capita, Whitman gets a little more money than Hanson, and we try to make sure every community I represent gets their fair share.
Senator, as we wrap up, anything we haven't touched upon, but you want to take a minute to at least share with the listeners, the voting public?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Kevin, for having me on WATD tonight. I'm happy to be on at a future time. I want to thank all my constituents for their continued support. I thank the towns that I currently represent, Hanover, Plimpton, and part of the Northeast, which is in Bristol County. As I mentioned, the district is changing, so I'm going to have all the rest of the existing towns, including the city of Brockton, and they are adding Avon and the South End of Randolph. So I've been meeting continuously with residents out there. I'm getting so much support. I'm grateful. I've got, you know, endorsements from the Mass Nurses and other groups out there, the Mass Retirees and all of that. But I'm knocking on doors. I'm meeting with residents. I'm listening to people. And that's the most important thing, as you know. You have two ears, so we're supposed to listen more to talk. So if anybody has to reach me, my office is 617-722-1200. They can also email my office at michael.brady@masenate.gov, or they can also email at my home email, which is bradybrockton@aol.com. And I want to hear from the residents, because when there's legislation coming up, we may get a few calls on that particular item, but not everybody cares about what's going on, and I like to talk to the residents beforehand. And I've been meeting with a lot of town officials that I've had a great relationship with over the years, whether it be town officials in Hanson, Halifax, East Bridgewater, and I'm constantly reaching out to them. I know there's three town hall meetings tonight that I'm attending, and I know Congressman Lynch is coming to Whitman tonight. I've had a great, wonderful relationship with him. I've been supportive of himself. He's been supportive of me, and we're going to meet in the town of Whitman tonight, but I also have two other towns I have to attend their town meetings tonight, because they're working on their budgets as we speak as well. So I just like to thank you, Kevin, for having on me on tonight, and I want to thank all the residents out there. I greatly thank their continued support, because none of us does this job alone. We have a great team working together in our district here.
State Senator Mike Brady, who I erroneously actually earlier called from the 2nd Plymouth, Norfolk. It's right now currently 2nd Plymouth, Bristol, our guest for this segment. We are going to step aside. That does it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. It's gone. It's evaporated. But ahead, hour number two of Monday Night Talk. Stay tuned.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
With summer coming, it's time to enjoy al fresco dining at the Patio at McGuigan's. The Patio at McGuigan's serves up dishes like koji steak tips, 14-ounce pork chops, and chicken masala. Have you heard about the Patio Sampler Platter? It's a dish worth driving to. And you can enjoy live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night at the Patio at McGuigan's. Patio at McGuigan's is at 552 Washington Street in Whitman Center. And check out McGuigan's Pub next door at 546 Washington Street.
Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield, ouch! But good news, we can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny and Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing, gimme that ding.
So give me that ding. Tiny and Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Later this hour, comedian, entertainer Dave Russo will be our guest joining us. But right now, COVID is still something that we're still dealing with, something we're still learning to live with. And a couple of topics that we're going to like to talk about. One is in regards to Dr. Anthony Fauci saying that our country is no longer in a pandemic phase. And also, the CDC and FDA altering COVID guidance and suppressing findings while under political pressure. Joining us to talk about these topics is Dr. Dean Fennelly, who is an expert on pharmaceutical and chemical-related technologies, located down in one of my favorite cities in the nation, down in D.C., as he has an office down there. Doctor, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Great to join you.
Of course, doctors with his office is Cooley LLP. So they focus on issues that are related to development, protection, and commercialization of biotech and pharmaceutical products. Your take as to where we are today in this day and age when it comes to COVID and how we're dealing with it, with everybody getting vaccinated. What's your thought and your opinion on this?
Well, I think we're in a really great position. You know, when you think, as you mentioned, I think about 65 to 70% of the country is fully vaccinated. You know, you combine that with, you know, knowing Omicron was so transmissible, many people, even vaccinated people for that matter, became infected. So when you combine the two, the vaccination, immunity conferred by vaccination, and immunity from natural immunity from people being exposed to the virus. In addition, we have, you know, we're where we need to be with diagnostic testing. You know, that hadn't been the case for the last couple of years. We have therapeutics that are now available that are effective even against Omicron. So I think when you look at where we are now compared to where we were even 6 months ago, we're in a very strong position. And, you know, I do agree. I think, you know, Dr. Fauci was speaking. I don't think he was declaring the pandemic's over. I think he was just saying it as we all think we're moving to that period where, you know, we know what it is. We know how to treat it. We know how to be responsible. And let's just move on with our lives.
So basically we're gonna start looking at this as an endemic. We're not gonna be looking at it as a pandemic, at least here in this country, right?
That's right. And certainly, you know, it's a global pandemic and it is still here, as you mentioned. But we'll see it pop up in isolated places, you know. So I agree with you. I think we're more looking at it and moving into that endemic phase, similar to how we treat flu. Rather than the pandemic. But the thing to remember is, you know, as people travel, you know, you leave the country, much of the world is not, you know, in the same position as the U.S. So if you're outside the U.S., you certainly have to still be very responsible.
Is it worth noting that now that we have gained control, at least for the moment, of COVID, that it's more from what we are doing to deal with it on our soil to maybe helping other countries deal with it? Because if we have it on, if at this particular time, if we're able to at least keep the levels, everybody is, you know, vaccinated 65-75%, is it a matter of getting maybe the rest of the world up to that mark?
I think that's right. I mean, and the U.S. has been doing quite a bit of humanitarian efforts to export the vaccine we had here, the vaccines we have here, to other parts of the world. And I think we'll continue to see that. But you're absolutely right. We have to probably pick up that pace, you know, for two reasons. First of all, just goodwill and to help these countries, because a lot of countries, especially when you look at sub-Saharan Africa and certain other developing countries, South America, they really don't, they're not anywhere near the levels where developed countries are. So from that aspect, the humanitarian aspect, I think is a good thing. But also, you know, when you think about, you know, the role the United States plays as, you know, the world's superpower, you know, just to lead the way in that regard. We saw a lot of countries, you know, when the vaccines first came out, particularly those authoritarian countries, using the vaccines as sort of a negotiating strategy to politicize and get their way in geopolitical politics. So, you know, the U.S. just wants to avoid that at all costs and just, you know, do this for A, the humanitarian reasons, and B, because that's what we should be doing.
What are you hearing from scientists in regards to the longevity of vaccinations and some of the vaccines that have been developed and the possibility of this still mutating while it's, you know, something that's still relevant in our society?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that's the really scary thing is, you know, we're trying to get back to normal in the U.S., but these variants pop up in places where the vaccination rates are very low, and that's where we're going to continue to see mutations. I mean, I think we're all, many people, especially public health officials, are keeping their fingers crossed that we don't see, you know, another Omicron-type variant that's highly transmissible, but also that's, you know, a lot more lethal. So we've been kind of, you know, I don't want to say fortunate, but, you know, it's a good thing that with the Omicron being so transmissible, it didn't also have that, you know, higher mortality with it. You know, you wouldn't expect that because as the virus mutates, you know, it's not going to become so lethal that it, you know, kills everything and it doesn't have a place to mutate. One wouldn't expect, but nonetheless, you know, it's still a time to be vigilant. And, you know, that's why when Dr. Fauci had made that statement about the pandemic, you know, moving out of the pandemic phase, he did get a lot of pushback because, you know, because this is a global pandemic, you know, we're going to continue to see mutations and they're going to continue to make their way to the U.S. So I think, you know, because we have the diagnostic testing, the vaccines, the therapeutics, as I mentioned, you know, we are in a good position. But nonetheless, we still have to be very vigilant, especially, you know, public health officials are really keeping a close eye on this.
When we talk about agencies like the CDC or the FDA, what is their duty when it comes to, you know, being, you know, the voice and the watchguard, you know, the watchdogs when it comes to certain discoveries, information, at least sharing that information with the public?
Yeah, you know, when we hear these stories about the CDC and the FDA getting involved in politics, and, you know, we've seen that since the start of the pandemic, you know, with the hydroxychloroquine and, you know, the pressure that was being put on the FDA to approve certain things. We saw it with plasma transfusions and et cetera. So, you know, that's one agent or two agencies, really. One, the FDA is the agency. Really, we need to keep politics out of that agency. You know, we have to be able to go to the pharmacy, to go into hospitals and trust the medication we're getting is properly authorized and properly approved. And, you know, by and large, the FDA is the gold standard globally when it comes to approving drugs. They do a tremendous job. You know, the age we're in now with politics really permeating everything, I don't think it's too surprising that, you know, we're hearing that in the FDA and CDC as well. But the concern I have is we don't want people to distrust, you know, another institution. We're already hearing, you know, politics is, you know, pervasive, and this distrust of institutions is very concerning. But when you talk about the FDA, it's particularly concerning, you know, because of their role in drug approvals.
What was your reaction in regards to the report about them suppressing findings regarding COVID?
I was shocked because, you know, a lot of, like I said, they have a lot of good people, great scientists that are in those agencies. And, you know, certainly we all have our views on politics, and it's sometimes hard to separate that from our job. But the idea of actually suppressing information or potentially changing information because of, you know, political pressure I was shocked to hear that. I was disappointed to hear that. And certainly, you know, the General Accountability Office really needs to dig into this and put an end to that. I know certainly we've heard that they're putting in place programs so whistleblowers could come forward to make sure that doesn't happen. But, you know, there's really no place of politics. I mean, science is very empirical. It's an iterative process. You don't need that politics in there. And especially, you know, with all this news of misinformation that, you know, I think we're generally pretty well up to speed on knowing what's factual about the virus and what's not. But there's still a tremendous amount of misinformation out there. And we need the FDA and CDC to be that gold standard of truth and, you know, be able to rely on them. Because a lot of this political nonsense that we're hearing, it's not only bending the truth, that some of this information is just outright lies. And we don't want to have any of that in FDA or CDC.
You know, you look at when we started first, the pandemic first reared its head, and we were getting, you know, regular updates in regards to the CDC as they were following this. What if we have another outbreak? I mean, can the public depend on what the CDC and the FDA have to say if we again have to deal with another pandemic like we're coming out of?
That's exactly the problem. Or even worse, you know, what happens if another mutation pops up and we have to, you know, tell people in the U.S., you know, mask mandates, lockdowns, et cetera. I mean, I certainly don't foresee that. But, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility to hear that a mutation comes up or, like you said, another pandemic. And, you know, I'd be very concerned that if that happens in the near term, that people would just not trust the FDA or, you know, we already have this fatigue where we want it to be over. We want to get back to normal. You know, so we need to trust the CDC that, you know, if they say it's time to mask up and, you know, we have this virulent mutation that's coming around, you know, we need to know it's not politically driven, you know, to kind of have government oversight in more of our lives and to trust that it's actual information and it's for the American safety.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Dean Finelli, and we're chatting with him in regards to a report that came, a bombshell report in regards to information being suppressed under political pressure. I guess I would ask you, and you've already said it, that, you know, the CDC and the FDA, they must be impartial by nature, but why would there need to be political interference?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think what it is politics just drives everything. And, you know, we saw how politics was, you know, these school board member union members were crafting the CDC guidelines as it related to masks in schools. I mean, that's just, it's incomprehensible, you know, that could happen. You know, you have people that likely don't have the scientific knowledge to even have or provide the input, much less to, you know, to force this. I mean, and that's a whole other story about, you know, parents, especially when you're talking about children, parents need to trust educators as well. So when you have this this sort of politicization of all of our institutions, it's extremely concerning.
I know up here in Massachusetts, it was something that we heard. There were a lot of folks who were divided in regards to mask mandates, whether it was something that was handed down from the state and the educational agencies up here to what they were hearing and comparing what the CDC had to say. What has it been like down in D.C. in the nation's capital? Has it been something similar, that there's a divide between parties and whether or not mask mandates needed to be implemented and trusting what the CDC had to say?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you go out to neighborhoods, you could even tell by the type of neighborhood you're in. You know, you go into a supermarket and see people with masks, and another one you see people without masks. And you could just say that, and it's very troubling. You know, when you see, and the thing that really concerned me was, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are sick, that have cancer, that you look at and they look relatively healthy, but you just don't know. And that's the people that, why we need to wear masks. And when you hear, look, no one likes to wear a mask, you know, especially in these summer months when it's hot, but we have to trust public health officials that they're providing us with truthful information. But you're the same situation that was going on up in Massachusetts, as you mentioned, was happening here, where, you know, it was D.C.'s very democratic and they were, you know, pushing the lockdowns, the mask mandates, and you know, more of the somewhat draconian measures that in more right-leaning cities and states you wouldn't see.
Is there anything that the federal government can do to at least clean up what's going on in regards to the FDA, or at least maybe monitor what they are doing? Or is it the federal government that's the problem?
No, I don't think it's the federal government that's the problem. I think it's, you know, I think that there should be a role for the government to get. I mean, if we think about what's the point of the FDA and CDC, you know, in this pandemic, and the point is for them to provide actual information to the local public health officials to advise us. And when we look at what was happening, a lot of the messaging that was coming out of CDC and FDA, notwithstanding the recent story, was accurate. And then as it got down to the local areas, that's where we saw the distortion. So I think, you know, when I've talked a lot about this on the radio and TV, and I would tell people still to go to cdc.gov, fda.gov. There's a lot of good factual information there. So I don't think generally, per se, there's misinformation at those sites. I think as the information was coming out of CDC, you know, as I mentioned with those school unions twisting the messaging, that's where we kind of saw the misinformation. So I think it was probably up to government to step in when that happened and say, no, we're not doing that. But again, you know, everything's political nowadays. So it's really, I'm optimistic that that is the case, that we could still trust government. But, you know, each day, I mean, we just heard of this, you know, misinformation board that the government wants to come out with that, you know, it's not hard to see how that could be twisted into a very politicized, evil word.
Could you know, this particular report, could we see more reports, especially with the midterm elections on the horizon?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Government Accountability Office, the government's watchdog, is just really at the tip of the iceberg with this. I think we're going to see a lot more information come out. I think we're going to see the FBI involved in doing interviews to make sure this gets weeded out. So absolutely, as we get closer to politics, you know, this is going to be probably something the administration has to own, you know, and we're going to see each side try and blame the other.
You know, I know you've done many, you do many radio and TV interviews in regards, you've probably done many in regards to these two topics that we've brought up. Anything that you've been asked by other hosts, but you feel could be of a value to my listeners that you've had discussions on in regards to the CDC and FDA?
Well, I mean, I think, again, people have become very cynical, and I think we have to be able to have some trust and some appreciation for the work that that government agencies like the FDA and CDC do and the people involved there. So, you know, the one thing I would say is just, you know, try not to become too jaded, because, you know, the politics goes on 24 hours a day now. You know, it's very easy to have a distrust. It's very easy to say, you know, oh, I don't trust the government, therefore I'm not wearing that mask, or I don't trust the vaccine. It was developed too quickly. I don't trust what the government's saying. So that's the main message. I would say, you know, when it comes to information coming out of FDA, generally it's all above board. It's all very factual, and it's still an agency that I think most people should trust.
I would ask you this, you being somebody who specializes in technologies, pharmaceuticals, is there anything on the horizon in regards to helping us stave off COVID and any mutations? Is there anything in the works that you and your office are aware of at this particular time?
Well, certainly new vaccines that are variant specific are being developed. They're looking at a combination of a flu and a coronavirus vaccine, so that you'd only have to get one shot. So those are some of the things that are coming out. There's also research being done on a pan-coronavirus that would, you know, basically affect or be a vaccine that would help against all coronaviruses, including additional mutations. So there's a tremendous amount of research that's being undertaken right now. But I think, you know, again, we're in a very strong position, and even the mRNA vaccines it's just incredible science there, and we're really seeing a kind of proof of concept for next generation technology, and COVID ushered that in. So I think we're going to see mRNA vaccines for other uses, and the interesting thing and the great thing about them is, you know, our current medicines, you know, they treat symptoms. The mRNA vaccines and mRNA technology, that has curative potential, meaning, you know, you have the ability to not just have someone take a pill every day to relieve symptoms, but actually cure diseases. So I'm really excited about that. And I think, you know, for all the negatives COVID have, I think it did usher in a new type of science and a new generation of healthcare that we're only really at the tip of the iceberg.
And when you talk, you know, new sciences, we also looking at maybe not only finding cures, but also finding affordable cures as well, right?
Absolutely. The mRNA vaccines generally, you know, they're relatively easy to make. They're not expensive to make. They're quick to make. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, how these pharmaceutical companies have to make back a lot of the research and development costs. So, you know, they'll probably be expensive initially, but generally, you know, mRNA vaccines and mRNA therapeutics, as they come out, they should not be these $100,000 per dose type drugs. They should be relatively affordable.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us to discuss both of these particular topics, not only about Dr. Fauci and his thought in regards to where the USA stands when it comes to the pandemic phase, but also talking about this report regarding the CDC and the FDA. It's very much appreciated having you on these airwaves to share these thoughts and this conversation and your knowledge of the area.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You got it. There he is, Dr. Dean Finelli, joining us. If I could bring Larry Nelson on. Larry, who from time to time I like to get his take on things. Larry, we got a couple of minutes left here before we take a quick break. Hearing the interview I did with Dr. Finelli and knowing that the CDC and the FDA actually suppressed information, they caved to political pressure as a member of society, as you know, somebody who votes. Give me your thoughts on being able to trust what you're being told by our leaders and by government agencies.
Well, people don't always get everything right. Scientists never get everything right. I'm still waiting for that ice age that they told us about in the 70s. Remember that, mid-70s?
Sure.
Yeah. But I think if we were allowed to, I think it would have been better off if we hadn't closed everything down, if we could have all just wore masks and washed our hands. I think we would have been better off.
But that's something, again, the idea that this is political. I mean, I've heard from folks who feel as though that COVID may end up come back stronger and better than ever in the next year and a half when we're talking about the presidential elections, so it'll have an effect on the voting public.
They'll use anything to get a foot forward, you know. You kind of wonder if there hadn't been a pandemic, would we be into the second term of President, what's his name there, Trump?
Right.
You know? Where would we have been, you know? Who else would have run? Were there people who would have run that were afraid to run because of COVID?
Right. Yeah, because a lot of us, I mean, what were we being told, you know?
Yeah.
Stay home. Don't, wear a mask.
But people stayed home but didn't wear masks.
Right.
And they were locked up indoors, so they spread it around. It all started, first it was called the baby boomer killer disease. You remember that, right?
I do.
They were calling it the China virus before Donald Trump called it the China virus. There were things out in the woods that kids were painting, places they'd get away from everybody to go party. China virus everywhere. And then there was a nursing home out in Washington State. And then they said it was fine for the kids to go to spring break. When they got the virus, they brought it home, and parents gave it to mom and dad, and kids gave it to their mom and dad, so it went around. And there was a health conference, either in Boston or New York was the other epicenter of it.
It was. And
there a health conference or something?
They did. It was, and Boston, too. Boston also had a conference, and that became like a super spreader.
There were kids that came back from overseas school trips that may have had it, you know, didn't know what they had, you know.
What's even more interesting is that we still, right now, we're seeing COVID positive results rising.
Different variants of it.
Different variants. The Omicron.
False positives. Positives.
Yeah.
I've taken two corona tests myself. I've had dozens of them done with different jobs I've had to do, and I was in someone's face for a number of days that was diagnosed with it. And I, you know, the hospital called to tell me, you know, that this person had it, and I said, well, should I get tested? Long pause on the phone. So, I mean, little things like that. They didn't even ask me. You know, I thought the government was going to call my house and say, hey, you've come in contact with somebody who has this. You need to get tested.
Right.
Never got that phone call.
Yep. Getting tougher and tougher to know who to trust. He is Larry Nelson, not only all-star producer of Monday Night Talk, but also radio personality here every Saturday night. We're going to step aside. Up next, Dave Russo, comedian, entertainer extraordinaire, joins us. You tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
The This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Moments like watching my grandson steal second mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for postmenopausal women or for men with HR positive HER2 negative NBC as the first hormonal based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
We are back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And again, I've used the analogy repeatedly, and then I look at my show almost like when you go out to dinner, right? You sit down. The first couple of segments, they're almost like the entree and the cocktail, right? Then we get into the 7 o'clock hour, and then we have the entree. Well, guess what, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen? We have arrived at the dessert portion of your show, which is usually the best, okay? Joining us today is a gentleman who he's been on several times before, but we've welcomed him back. And he's a great friend. He's none other than Dave Russo. You've probably seen him here and there and everywhere. Fantastic comedian, entertainer, extraordinaire, and athlete, too, I should throw in there, because the guy's got chops when it comes to playing baseball, softball, hockey, probably basketball, too.
Well, thank you for that. And by the way, you hit the nail on the head, entertainment and sports. And I think that's how I ended up getting into entertainment, Kevin. By the way, thank you for the plug for the athlete thing. I think, you know, people say you're a comedian. I go, well, I'm an entertainer, and I'm an athlete, and I'm a comedian third. Does that make any sense whatsoever, although I do stand-up comedy for a living?
Yeah.
But you know what? Comedy right now, today, it has a negative connotation somehow. Oh, you're a comedian. You're offensive. I've been doing this stuff 25 years. If I was offensive, people would know who I am more. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm under the radar because I don't offend people. But I entertain and tiptoe. And I know we had like a pre-interview, and I was kind of excited to tell my story, actually, how I got into entertainment.
Well, how did you?
Well, quite honestly, I was born to be an entertainer, whether it's I was a middle child or whatever DNA, whatever genes I got from, you know, I put it this way. I was a small kid. I was athletic. I was doing handstands and headstands and going to my sister's gymnastics class. So I had athletic ability early on, and I had an older sister and a mom, and they would dance. They would play music and they would dance. And somehow I ended up I took up dancing so well that my nickname was the ballerina, And by the time I was 13 years old, a gentleman by the name of Wyatt Jackson from Jamaica Plain, he is a award-winning dancer choreographer. He discovered me as a young kid and put me in national commercials for Dunkin' Donuts, Tweeter Stereos, Sugar Babies Candies, got me in a full-page spread, which I have. I mean, this is an audio. He got me in a full-page spread to model for Nike in the Boston Globe. It's in black and white. I still have it. The funny thing is that it was a time when I was a Caucasian kid, but I could dance better than pretty much than anyone, including the girls. You know what I mean? Like, people would want to see me dance, and I was a real small kid, so I was kind of like a circus entertainer, if you think about it, because the Russo's here. He's going to spin on his head. He's going to do windmills. And we used to battle back then, so no one wanted to compete against me because no one could do what I could do. I was ambidextrous when it came to sports, so I was doing windmills one way. This is breakdance determining. So windmills the other way, spinning on my head, taking off my clothes while I'm spinning on my head. A lot of people don't know about this, but my freshman year in high school, we became stars of the show, my breakdancing group. My partner was Ellen Pompeo's husband from Grey's Anatomy. And we wanted, hands down, we wanted ridiculous. So the early part of my life, and I'm talking back in 1983, 84 to 85, I say this now, even how I can't be honest, but my friends were people of color. I was hanging out with people of color more than I was my Caucasian, my white buddies, because I was breakdancing and I was hanging out with the crews and the floor lords from Dorchester or Little D Rock. And you know what I mean? It was a different time back then. I see it coming around now. And cause I know we're going to talk about entertainment and offensive or anything like that. So I kind of grew up in the city. So I was around all different types of ethnicities, races. What's up?
Cultures, you use a lot of different cultures.
Well, I can tell you this, and I go back to how my life changed, or which angle I went. I had money to buy one album, and the album was either Rappers of Light by the Sugar Hill Gang or The Who. And as much as I love The Who, right now I'll tell you, I said, hip hop, you don't stop, but rock it out, baby, bubba to the boogie, the bang, bang. Anyways, I can do the whole thing for 15 minutes. So I was just fascinated with that kind of that. Maybe because I'm Italian, I love to dance, I love to move and do all that stuff. But I was deep in the entertainment industry as a young kid, doing national commercials for Nabisco, modeling for the Boston Globe and for Nike and Esprit. And this national commercial, I was hand selected this national commercial, Sugar Babies Candies, Nabisco. And you want to talk about the rainbow now when you're doing casting. You want to make sure you have a Caucasian, Latino. You know, we were ahead of the curve back in – this commercial is on my Instagram, at Boston Comedian. And it even says it aired July 5th, 1984. And we had an African-American kid in the commercial. We had a Latino kid. We had a girl. We had Caucasian. We had the whole rainbow. And so I've been, you know, being an entertainer or what have you, starting then, it just came to me. Never took a lesson or anything like that. So that's how I got into entertainment early on. And then quite honestly, when breakdancing ended, when I was a sophomore in high school, that's when I got back into the sports again. And that's a whole other journey. But because even before I did the dancing, I was playing Pop Warner football and throwing touchdowns and being on the hockey team and scoring goals and being like this little
dynamo.
Yeah. And you know, and the weird thing is, you don't really know it at the time. Like, I didn't realize, like, when you were a kid back then, you lined up smallest to tallest. Even in my school, usually it was the girls the smallest. I was still always the smallest kid. And I didn't really realize it. You know what I mean? So I was still, and so I, all these, so when I know I'm jumping around a little bit, when I get into entertainment business, I always have always just considered myself to be somewhat famous, because since I was 9 years old, I have circles around me watching me dance. People want to come out to see me. And so I got to a certain level, and I'm kind of, and I'm enjoying life. I know you're going to come up and ask about comedies like nowadays. I'm enjoying comedy more now than I probably ever have in the history of doing stand-up comedy. Because, first of all, entertainers, /comics, I think they're a comic, they get weeded out for someone to fool. I mean, it takes time to be a professional comedian. There's only a couple Eddie Murphys out there that 17 years old, the next thing you know, run, you know what I mean? It takes time. It takes time. People like Bill Burr have been doing it almost 40 years. Now he's a household name. Do you know what I mean? He was just as funny 40 years ago. So basically,
you are a local child celebrity.
Yeah.
Who is still famous, because we know that a lot of child celebrities usually don't have the sustainability to be able to be a entertainer when they're older.
Well, you know, it's funny. So real quick, all right? When you're coming up in the neighborhood where I grew up, you played sports, okay? So that's where the catch-22 was. I was playing sports. I was a good athlete, and I was friends with the guys. So a lot of them gave me the benefit of the doubt that I was a little dancer back then. You know what I mean? Hey, yep. Let David do his little dancing. You know what I mean? That was – it was really like, you know, put it this way. In my neighborhood where I grew up in Malden, you know, you kind of – bullying was legal back then. I mean, I got rolled up in a rug more than once, you know? So you had to, you know, you had to pretty much be careful. But when I went from sports to dancing, that's been like a little bit of a controversy, you know, a little bit of, you know, when you're doing commercial and you're popular, that's when some people like you and some people don't like you. You know what I mean? So
jealousy.
So you get bullied, things like that. So I remember this. I want to share the story with you. I'm not going to say the teacher's name because I let that go. But I remember at the end of when breakdancing ended as a freshman, he said, "What are you going to do now to be popular?" You know, because like rock and roll was coming back. And I ended up my sophomore year joining the wrestling team. And I went from being a dancer nicknamed the ballerina to ended up becoming my high school's first ever state wrestling champion. I got MVP in the state of Massachusetts my senior year in the state tournament. I got MVP in the sectional tournament, and I got MVP in the league tournament, like back to back to back, and I ended up wrestling Division I in college, was ranked top 20 in the United States of America. So I took entertainment off from 1985. Yeah, from 86 to 93, I did high school and college, wrestled Division I. And then in 1997, I won the gold medal, which is on my Instagram. I won the gold medal at the Bay State Games, came out of retirement, was seeded 15 out of 16, won the gold medal, and then started doing comedy a month later at Remington's in Boston. And started smoking cigarettes when I was 30. And partying like an animal for about 15 years. And I say that jokingly. Say I was an athlete, never smoked. Next thing I'm partying, smoking. I mean, I don't anymore, you know. But it's like I went from this one extreme, entertainment, to like Division I, back to life of entertainment. So now I'm in entertainment, and I'm loving comedy more than ever because, you know, you have to – first of all, you have to edit while you have to edit while you're talking. And more men should do this when having conversations with women, by the way. Like, don't have a spill out of your face before you edit it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, I think one of the people said, you know, and one of the people said that it's like Magic Johnson going down the court and thinking before he instinctually passes to that guy, because that guy, you know, might be offended by the pass or something like that. You know what I mean? So that's what comedy is like. If you go in there with no malice, like, I don't go in intentionally to harm anyone. Like, if I offend anybody or anger anyone, it's not out of hatred. It's out of ignorance. So be tolerant. You're supposed to be tolerant of my ignorance. So be nice.
If you're tuning in, we are speaking with Dave Russo, who is an entertainer Rambler. Locally here. I see him as a comedian. So I'm a guy who's a funny guy. I've seen him as an MC of an event with other comedians, and is a fantastic comedian. I've seen him do a lot of charity work, right? To mention, he's got, let me see, don't you have wine named after you? Don't you have a wine in your name? I mean,
you know, I do. As a matter of fact, Fulcino Vineyard, A Taste of Italy, 1 hour north of Boston, next to Nashua. It's my cousin's winery, and he just about a little over 12 years ago, he broke ground on it, and I was one of the family members that was supportive, and and worked a little bit. I was the first guy that would show up to work. I worked about an hour, and then I power napped because that stuff is hard work being a farmer, and I'm an entertainer. So, no, but we produce shows at Focino Vineyard in Hollis, New Hampshire. It's right next to Nashville. It's a North Shore thing. But, yeah, I have my own wine. I have a Malbec wine. It's semi-dry. It's dry, jammy, and it goes great with anything Italian. Let's say if you want to have raviolis or – yeah, it's a pretty much – we have over 40 wines there, and – yeah, so that was my pandemic relief fund. If you buy my Malbec,
what was it? What was it like performing during COVID? Was it difficult to kind of wait it out? Or did you find things to do while we all kind of sat around and waited for the world to come back to life?
See, this is where I think the entertainer in me and the showman in me really shined during the pandemic. I really did. I came up with jokes right away. You know, and I don't think non-offensive jokes. I'll go through some of the jokes I did for you. Right? Is that possible to do?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, I can see you because you're on Zoom, and you can see me because we're on Zoom doing this interview.
Yep.
And although there's no mask mandate anymore, I wish this Zoom was mask mandated because I've been looking at your face. I have fun with that with the jokes. I go, people, after looking at you, I wish the mask mandate was in effect. And then I go, I want to thank that person for wearing a mask. They must be wicked, hideous. Thank you for hiding your face. And we have fun with it. I'm not negative or pro or negative. I just do jokes about it. Like, because I'm Italian. People, what do you think about the mask? They go, well, I'm Italian. If you have a big nose and nice eyes, the mask might not be a bad look on you. I mean, put it this way. The mask was supposed to stop particles from going in our mouth. Yet look around. We all gained 35, 40 pounds. People, keep your masks on. You gain weight, right?
Yeah.
My favorite joke about the pandemic was because no matter what, we're in a pandemic, but you know people are going to make an accessory of that mask. And the women did a great job. You know what I mean? Like, it was beautiful. Some guys might be legs guys. Some guys might be breast guys. I think I'm a mask guy. I saw a woman with a mask and an eye patch. I asked her to marry me right there. Like, when I disappoint a woman, I only want one eye looking back at me. And I'm like, I'm getting old, but double mask my face. You know, so these are jokes that I just think are just fun to do with people. You know, the big thing, and I'll talk to you about this, is politics. And you can't talk about politics because I don't really take politics very seriously. I don't, you know, because I have friends on both sides that I've done fundraisers for. You talk about charity events. You know what I mean? Our friend Jeff.
Jeff Deal.
I met Jeff Deal. I thought he worked at Comedy Central when I met him. I had a blast with that guy. We had a good night. Find out he's running for what? Governor?
Yeah, no, he's running for governor. He was running for senator before.
Yeah,
U.S.
No,
Senate.
That.
Yep.
And, you know, and I thought he was a sweet guy. And I've also done stuff, and I guess he leads on the right. I don't know. And then I've done stuff for Gary Christensen, the mayor of my hometown, man, Marlin. Love him to death. You know what I mean? I don't question his ball. I've known the kid since he was 11. He was my newspaper boy at 9 years old. I've been friends with him like this. I'm not going to – I trust that guy. You know what I mean? So it's like – but I do tease some of the politicians. I tease, like, Elizabeth Warren. Like, I find her attractive, you know. Well, one percent of her, I find very attractive. It's goofy because, like, I did a joke about teasing all the people running for president, and I didn't think it was bad at all. I didn't get much backlash. I said I did a joke about Elizabeth Warren. I said I think I could beat her. I would go old school tactics. I would say to people, "You're going to vote for Elizabeth Warren? Her initials are EW. Ew." You know, and the young kids are going to vote for Bernie Sanders. His initials, BS. Okay, and then Donald Trump, we voted for. We got the DTs. Jesus, stop tweeting, stop talking. You know, so it's like I made fun of everybody on that one. You know,
do you find, regardless if it's political or not, do you find it easy to come up with material? I mean, do you just come up with material on a whim, or do you have to have like a Dave Russo session?
You know what? I can tell you this. My brain with the ADHD or whatever the hell I have, sing zang song, when I get a good one, it comes to me and I got to write it down. I'll give you an example. The whole thing with the Will Smith and the Will Smith smacking Chris Rock. I immediately said to myself, this is why I think I'm getting better as a comedian. Okay. I said, oh my God, Will Smith played Muhammad Ali in that movie, and he slapped Pookie, the crackhead from New Jack City, and he couldn't even knock him down with one slap. You know what I mean? So you don't know the reference. Chris Rock played a crackhead in the movie
New Jack City.
Yep. And his name was Pookie.
Right.
He was 85 pounds. So Muhammad Ali couldn't smack down Pookie. So that's a joke. And then another comedian, another professional African American, with D.L. Hughley, did something very similar to that. So I was like, all right, I'm on to something. Do you know what I mean? Like when you do certain material and you see other professional comedians that you respect and dig, and they're doing something similar, not the same thing, because you have to have your own take on it, you know, you feel good about yourself. And I remember the first time that happened for me is when, I forget what the joke was, but it was something about, I was on a payphone. That's how long ago it was, on the payphone. And the lady said, you have to owe, you know, you owe $2.30. We're going to charge the person on the line. I was like, well, go ahead. Look at what I get. I'm going to pay for it. And when I read Jerry Seinfeld's book, that was one of the bits, something similar to that hit in his book about, well, go ahead, charge that. What do I want? You know, that type of thing. So entertainment has always been in my blood, whether it's been writing, dancing, choreography. And by the way, playing sports, when you're playing football and playing hockey, that is so much entertainment. So I've been going back and forth from sports to entertainment my entire life, probably for that little bit of a rush. But to be quite honest, you know, I mean, it's consistent. You know, you don't want to go too high and too low.
Well, I know not too long ago you did multiple episodes of Dirty Water TV. Are you doing? Do you have any projects on the front burner right now that you're working on that you can tell the listeners?
You know what? I yes. So aside from the wine and the Scally Cap, my classic Scally company, we did film a pilot for my family's winery, Start Wining, and that's nice. But the podcast that you and I have spoke about, I have a name for it. I have a hook for it, and that's something that within, hopefully, God willing, when September starts in school, this podcast is going to be up and running, coming right from here where I live, and I'll tell you all about it later. But it's going to have to do with sports and entertainment, because I don't forget, I have friends in the entertainment industry, from, you know, Ellen Pompeo and her family to my buddy, my college roommate, married one of the Dixie Chicks. How cool is that? How cool is that?
No, aren't they just the Chicks now? Did they change their name?
I don't, you know what? I don't do any negative jokes towards women in my act.
No. I'm saying this is the Dixie Chicks are no longer. I think they changed their name to.
No, Kevin. Yes. I was doing a joke. And I was setting up a joke for that. And
okay. Oh, I took
it's
that.
Too comfortable, because, like, you know, they're saying Muslim the comedian. I'm like, I got to throw a joke in here every third freaking. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. Anyways. I'm in Malden right now. By the way, I'm in Malden right now. So if you hear sirens in the background,
it's okay.
My friends. No, I have a lot of respect for the police. My grandfather was a criminal.
We're speaking with Dave Russo, who's our guest, entertainer, comedian, athlete, dancer.
Yeah.
Extraordinaire. We get a few more minutes with you, Dave. So what do you get for shows that if folks want to come out and see you? What do you got going on here, at least on the South Shore, down on the Cape?
Okay, can I make one more laugh story right now? Because I still love the fact that I played Pop Warner football at 10 years old, and I still love bragging about how much I had. But you know, the craziest thing is that I took sports so seriously that I have to tell you, we played softball together. You probably don't know this. I'm a 6-time Boston Comedy co-ed softball champion, right? On 2 separate teams, because I was on one team. I pissed them off so bad they traded. But one team traded me to another team. The league was mad at me for winning. And they go, oh, you got to get on a different team. And then Giggles wanted me. So anyway, so where do I have comedy shows coming up? Everywhere. I'm all over the world. I have Cape Cod coming up. You ready for Cape Cod? It's going to be crazy. You ever go to Southern Yarmouth, Pier 1, Skippy's Pier 1 on the water?
I have been there, yes.
It's like you're in a boat. You're in a boat. It's a Titanic. So maybe, you know, you'll hook up. We're doing Mondays, every Monday at Skippy's Pier 1 and starting Memorial Day, May 30th through August 29th, Mondays only. And it's an 8:30 show, and people get ripped and they walk home because they're right on. It's like unbelievable. They have the boat. People are all a bunch of boats there. They come off the boats. They come to the show. And then we all go back on the boat. And I don't like to go on boats because I'm Italian. A lot of times we go on boats. You know, we don't come back.
Right.
Fish, though. A lot of fish now. You like fish? You're a sucker. You like
fish? Love fish.
Right. That's how I got on the Charlie Moore show. Because he goes, what's your favorite fish? I was like, Swedish.
The candies, yes.
Yeah.
Very nice. So how is that? How is that doing that show with Charlie Moore?
You know, you better be on your toes. You know what I mean? He's a zigzagger. He's on point. You know what I mean? Oh. He has a vision in his mind. There's a reason why he's successful. There's a reason why people like him are successful. They do it their way. And if you don't do it their way, you better get out of the way. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, it's. I've learned a ton. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to bring some of that knowledge to some more of my Dirty Wide TV projects. And, yeah, there's plenty going on in the entertainment business in New England. Everything's opening up right now. So I'm just really enjoying live performances at Focino Vineyard in Hollis, New Hampshire. We got a bunch. We have myself, Lenny Clark comes up there. Hurley comes up there. Don Gab. We get the best of the best. Sweeney. All my buddies come up there. You know, Pete Costello. You probably met Pete a couple times.
Yep.
Mike McCarthy. All my buddies.
As we close out our segment, we just got a moment. If folks want to follow what you're doing, if they want to come to one of your shows, and they want to, you know, see what you're playing. How, you got a website? You got Facebook? How do you do?
It's so easy to find people. You go to DaveRusso.net. That's DaveRusso.net, not .com. That's a plumber in Ohio. So it's DaveRusso.net. Okay. You can do hashtag DaveRussoComedy. You can do hashtag Russo on the Road. You can, you know, Facebook. My Instagram and my Facebook is, and Twitter is at Boston Comedian. So just, I don't know, I'm Russo. I'm on the road. Hey, you didn't ask me about that. Oh, by the way, so nobody can see it because we're on radio.
Yeah, you got a Stevie Nelson. You got a Stevie. Stevie Nelson was my favorite linebacker of all time.
Okay. All right. So tell you this. So there's a number 57 behind me when we're doing this mini podcast. Well, I'm not exactly sure what we're doing.
It's a radio segment. Yes.
Awesome. Love it. I love it all. So 57, Steve Nelson. So my first Pop Warner football team ever when I was this is the first year my team didn't win. I mean, I wasn't like part of the winning team. I was on the team, but I was a bench warmer. It was my first time playing Pop Warner. I was like 7 years old. I was like 48 pounds. I weighed like 48 pounds. And my thump number was 57. They gave me number 57. My team ended up winning the championship that year. But I wasn't like a star, but I learned how to be a winner. My first coach was Charlie Russell from Brockton, Massachusetts, the city of champions. So that's, I've always had that champion mentality. So my first coach, they talk about how to enter the big sports and being competitive and all this stuff. Maniac coaches. So the story is from Steve Nelson. So I do a fundraiser for him for the college, Curry College.
Yep.
Yeah. The Comedy Catcher for New Hall. And I go on stage and I'm doing my dress. You know what? I got to tell you something right now, guys. I said, I can't make this up. True stories. My first football number was 57. That was given me 57. And I said, I remember because I was like, Grover. I was like 7 years old. Okay, Grover's 12, Tippett's 83. Who do you have for Steve Nelson? Right? And Steve Nelson got a kick out of it and mailed me his jersey, which is hanging on the wall right there. And I have been friends with him ever since. But the true matter is that my first Pop Warner phone ever given to me was number 57. How cool is that?
Meant to be.
Yeah. And I got to tell you something. He's a Hall of Famer. And so he asked me once if I ever had any wrestling videos of me. And I said, you know what? I do have a Vimeo wrestling of me. And he watched it. And, dude, I've never gotten choked up or felt more proud when he said, he goes, dude, you are relentless. He just said you were an animal. And that's coming from a Hall of Fame linebacker, okay? And back in the 70s when people were animals, rip your face up, you know what I mean? Step on your, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, because I always bummed out that I wasn't a pro athlete because I was wicked small growing up. Like when they played Pop Warner football, I know we're getting out of the segment. I was 50 pounds, 10 years old, so they made me stay back a year. I couldn't even play with my own age kids. I had to play with kids younger than me. And I used to smack him around. It was awesome.
There he is. Dave Russo, our guest. Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Cap, this was a blast, man. I got to, this is my therapy for the month. This is awesome.
Good. I'll send you a bill. And folks, that's all the time we have here until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night.